And now, Understanding the Times with Jan Markell, a program committed to helping you contend for the faith and view current events through the lens of the Bible. Here's Jan Markell.
Welcome to the program that tries to look at news, views, and inconvenient truths from a decidedly biblical perspective. Now into our 12th year of broadcasting, this particular segment I'm going to be talking to a very familiar voice, that of White House correspondent Bill Koenig, Koenig's International News. We'll give contact information a little bit later. You've heard Bill on numerous times over the years. First got acquainted with him at one of our conferences going back to 2002. Might have been our first one, in fact. So, Bill Koenig, welcome back to the program.
Always great to be with you, Jan. Thank you.
And Bill will be with us in the next week at Understanding the Times 2011. Bill, you entered the press corps in January of 2001, and that was about the time George W. Bush became president. And so you've been through two administrations, the Bush administration, Obama administration now. How do the two administrations compare? And I mean, from your perspective as a journalist, as one who asks questions, those types of things, more transparent, less transparent?
Well, Jan, it's really an interesting contrast of the two administrations. But before I get to that, I think the key here for us in our work at the White House with our focus on Israel and the Middle East is the biblical role our American presidents serve the Lord. You know, Ronald Reagan was the one that really pushed for that Iron Curtain to come down because of his activity. Over a million Jews were able to leave Russia to go back to Israel, or to go to Israel. Also, the gospel was spread throughout Russia. And when you look at each one of these presidents, Jimmy Carter and his role in the Israeli-Egyptian peace accord, and then you look at Ronald Reagan and his, well, as I just mentioned, Ronald Reagan, and then when you look at George W. Bush, he was the one that began the Land for Peace process, put a lot of effort into it, but shortly thereafter, he was out of office. And I think that was one of the main reasons things just completely went wrong for him after he got involved. And then Bill Clinton had a significant role of pushing it faster because of his attempt to make up for the atonement for the Lewinsky case. George W. Bush reluctantly got involved in the peace process, but he's the one that brought the mantra of today's peace talks, two states living side by side in peace and security. And now Obama, with his pressure on Israel to divide Jerusalem's free settlement construction and his hand in the Arab Spring, are making Israel's borders more insecure. So that's the key that I look at, Jan, in terms of their biblical roles.
You're one of few. How many? Are there half a dozen believers in the press corps?
What's interesting, of the half a dozen Christian correspondents at the White House, I'm the only one that is not from a replacement theology church that fully understands the biblical significance of what's happening in Israel today.
So how do they deal with you?
Well, it's interesting. Is they, first of all, you know, 65% of our church in America, the replacement theology part of the church, are about 100 million American churchgoers, mm-hmm. have no understanding of the biblical significance of what's taking place in the nation of Israel today. So what I attempt to do is talk to them about prophecy, about the final days. I bring up with them, as well as my Jewish friends at the White House or my Middle Eastern correspondent friends, is I usually go, well, have you heard of Armageddon? Oh, they go, oh, absolutely. I said, do you realize that that is the final battle for the city of Jerusalem? And they go, no. And then I start explaining to them about the time, about a peace deal, and I give them some things to watch, and I mention some scriptures. And some just say, you know, gosh, I hope I'm not here when that happens, or, oh, that sounds ominous. I've just never been into that kind of thing. No one's really, you're basically educating, but no one is incredibly captivated by it because of fear or just lack of interest.
You've written a very classic book, Olive Tree Ministries. I don't know, we carried it for years. It's Eye to Eye, Facing the Consequences of Dividing Israel. And you've distributed that to a number of people in very high places. But let's speak more up to date here. You have gotten this book into the hands of people in high places in the current administration, some media representatives, some Congress people, some top officials in the Obama administration. Do you get any kind of feedback on this?
Yes, absolutely. What we have done in the last 12 months, myself and my assistant, we have personally hand-delivered eye-to-eye to top major media figures, top members of Congress that are involved in the Land for Peace process in the Senate, in the House, top members of the Obama administration, their chiefs of staff, Vice President Biden. We've got a book into Rahm Emanuel's hand when he was chief of staff, David Axelrod, and also key people at the State Department. And we've all warned them by a letter stating that the land of Israel, as we know, was given by God to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and their descendants, and that promised land is not to be divided and not to be occupied with Muslims or enemies to the nation of Israel. It's for the Jewish people, and if we continue this course, there will be even greater consequences beyond what I've written about in this book to leaders and nations for attempting to divide that land.
What is the reaction?
The reaction has been very positive by the Christians and a couple of the Jewish leaders. They understand it. What's interesting is our Congress right now is probably never been more supportive of Israel, Jan, but at the same time, they also stand for a two-state solution after Israel's guaranteed of peace and security. So we're attempting to show these key members of Congress that the two-state solution is in a direct opposition to the Bible. And we have received some reaction, but a lot of these guys are very careful what they express, and plus the fact that I have four letters to President Bush and his top staff and three responses in my book. So I think they're being a little cautious how they respond. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, those who are from our part of the church are Orthodox Jews. They see it very closely. And at the same time, it's an education process that they're responding to.
Well, let me give some contact information. Folks, if you are at all curious about the book, again, we carried this book almost forever, and it was very popular. It's still in circulation. Best thing to do is to go to the website watch.org. That's the home of Koenig's International News, watch.org. And that's how I would recommend, folks, that you do it. When you get there, you will also see an opportunity to sign up for his e-newsletter once a week. If you want to sign up for 6 months, it's literally pennies a day. And that's Koenig's Eye View from the White House. So check that out at watch.org. You want to get a hold of me? OliveTreeViews.org, OliveTreeViews.org. I'll give my office a phone number a little bit later. Bill, I think when the Arab Spring, so-called Arab Spring, broke out, which is probably leading to winter war, not necessarily this winter, but it's leading to conflict down and around the corner at some point in time. And then we've seen this current administration and how they're handling or actually not handling the Middle East situation at all. How would you vote on the Obama administration's handling of the Middle East? Let's limit it to his term in office since January 2009.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple items today, and obviously I'll give you a lot more detail and a lot more fascinating connections at your conference. This is a very significant set of actions and responses and cause and effects. So initially, and I'll give you the summary today, two things. Right after Obama took office, within his first 72 hours, he was on Al Arabiya TV, which is owned by the Saudi government, speaking to the Muslim world about his desire to work out a peace plan between the Israelis and Palestinians. And then a couple months after that, he went and spoke to Turkey's parliament, where he stated that that they're talked about moderate Muslims. And then the next day, Prime Minister Erdogan stated specifically there's no such thing as a moderate Muslim. And then on June 4th of 2009, he spoke to the Arab world from a religious school in Cairo that's very that has a good relationship with the Muslim Brotherhood. And it was basically his address and vision for the Muslim world. And he also talked about the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. Had a lot of miscalculations, misstatements, and I think some were just flat deception. So that was his effort there to develop some kind of rapport with the Muslim community. As far as Israel, they called for an immediate freezing of all settlement construction. Hillary Clinton had a huge role in that. He also talked for about all construction being stopped in Jerusalem. And he also talked about moving toward a peace meeting, which they finally had on 9/1/92 of last year at the White House with Mubarak and Abdullah. And beyond that, not much else has happened until this last week at the UN, where President Abbas went to the UN asking for state status. So what has happened in two things. One is the his activities with the Muslim world helped lead to this Arab Spring, and his activities in Israel helped lead to Israel being in a very precarious position.
Mm-hmm. You were actually present. You were, at least you were in New York during that time when the United Nations was meeting and Abbas was addressing the whole congregation there at the United Nations. Let's see. Can you just give us a summary of what you may have. Now, I realize you weren't in the session of the United Nations. You were, nonetheless, I believe you were in the same building or at least very close.
Matter of fact, next door. I was in the hotel that Abbas was staying in. Matter of fact, right after his speech, he had a meeting with Jimmy Carter there at the hotel. I was on the second floor in a conference put on to counter the Durban conference, because the Durban conference was started also on September 22nd. And I'm sorry, actually Abbas spoke to the UN the next day. But I was there when Abbas and Jimmy Carter were meeting the day before his speech. The point, the important point here was I was in a meeting with Christian Jews and Muslims that were supporters of Israel that were countering many of the things that the Palestinians were doing. So I spent an all-day, I was in an all-day conference, and we have some information about that at the website and definitely my last week's news report. What was important, Jan, was what is exposing of what the Palestinians are attempting to do, and they are very cleverly attempting to move into a status as a state which will give them certain levels of right that they don't have now. And Israel says, as well as the international community, as well as the quartet, as well as the United States, saying you don't need to be doing this right now. What you need to be doing is sitting down and being serious about negotiations. But there's 55 Muslim countries in the UN, and they had a big role in this, as well as some of the other non-favorable nations or nations that do not favor Israel in pushing Abbas to do this.
Okay, so how did but you were in the Durban meeting.
Yes.
Do you want to comment on that?
Well, yes. I think the important thing about Durban, okay, this is, there was Durban 1, 2, and
yes.
3, and basically this is an anti, what it really boils down to, Janet, it's very anti-Semitic, and it's an attempt to make Zionism an evil word.
Yeah.
Started in Durban, South Africa. And then they were in Switzerland, now that they were here at the United Nations. It's very interesting, is Durban 3 was held on September 22nd, And when you look at everything that they've done, it's been very anti-Israel and has not been favorable to Israel. And then the next day, we have the Palestinian president going to the UN asking to be declared a state, and then also supplying his paperwork to the UN Security Council. So, you know, what I saw while in New York is a UN that's becoming much more pro-Muslim, that also continues to have dictators that are corrupt. And I think that this is the eye-opener I continue to see, is just how ineffective mm-hmm. the UN is, and especially on the legislative level or on the General Assembly level, where you have nations that are that have their own self-interest and that in the future are going to be dangerous to Israel as well as the United States. It supplies 25% of their annual budget.
Well, Bill, you actually write about, and this would be in your most recent Koenig's Eye View from the White House, you write about another organization that I would have to admit to being woefully ignorant about. I just have not researched it, and that's Bill Clinton's outfit. Let me just read two paragraphs, and you write this in your last week's issue. Probably the greatest focus this week here in New York, that's when you were there, greatest focus this week here in New York, beside the Palestinian vote, was Bill Clinton's annual event that is at the beginning of the United Nations General Assembly each September. His organization, the Clinton Global Initiative, is enormous. They are doing the same things the UN is supposed to be doing without the UN's corrupt dictators and Islamic agenda. You're writing there almost implying that this Clinton Global Initiative, which you need to explain, might be just a tiny bit more righteous than this corrupt UN organization.
Well, when you look at the their agenda, it was the September 20th through September 22nd. When you look at their agenda, when you look at all the things that they're doing, they're into global warming, they're into sustainability, they're into helping poor countries around the world. They're dealing with poverty and pestilence and all of these major issues that are affecting the world. Clinton brought in the top people in those fields to give presentations to his global initiative. And they have pledges at just under $65 billion to do some pretty extraordinary things around the world. And they said that the Clinton Global Initiative programs have already affected 300 million people, have already helped 300 million people, I should put it that way. So it has become a force. And the fact that they're having at the very same time as the UN General Assembly is getting underway, just a couple blocks down the street, along with the fact that Hillary Clinton was also the Secretary of State and also involved in this, is pretty amazing. And, you know, the UN has so many political problems and so much baggage. It's almost like a future international arm that's being built inside of the Clinton Global Initiative. Mm-hmm. And he has a lot of Fortune 500 companies and major companies around the world providing this money.
This is amazing. We have a governor here from Arkansas, and he's actually forming what could be, and I'm using a word that may not be the most effective here, some competition for the United Nations. This is truly amazing.
It is, Jan, and it's all a part of these final day pieces.
Sure.
You know, they're coming together. You have the European Union. You have Tony Blair, who's a good friend of Bill Clinton's, who also spoke at this event. You have Bill Clinton that is the head of the quartet, which is putting pressure on Israel to divide their land. You have, you know, Tony Blair has Blair Faith, and Rick Warren is on his board.
Mm-hmm.
And they have big, huge global ecumenical plans. So, I mean, this is just a small part of what I'm going to offer, but I'm going to connect the dots in your conference. But there, and then you have George Soros that's in the play.
I want to go there in a minute.
You just have a lot of key players that are attempting to guide and direct the world. From the outside, it looks innocent, but on the inside, we see where it's leading towards this one world political, religious, and financial order that the scriptures speak of.
Folks, if you join me late, you are listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm Jan Markell, your host. In this segment, I am talking to Bill Koenig. He serves in the White House Press Corps. He actually entered that press corps in 2001 under the Bush administration. So he's been there about 11 years. Bill, you named a name a minute ago, and that is George Soros. I seem to never lose interest in talking about this guy. And you write in your, let's see, your newsletter last week, you say Soros has used his billions to influence the White House. He has spent millions of dollars to counter the Jewish settlers of Samaria. He also had a hand in the Arab Spring. And he said, let's see here. Then you say, I will have more on this later, meaning in a future newsletter. Well, Bill Koenig, I would like later to be right now. Just a sentence. That's all. I just would like a sentence from you on what you mean there.
First of all, he's made billions trading currencies, betting one currency against another. He's made money on the London. In the United Kingdom, on betting against the pound. He made a tremendous amount of money betting against the South Asian currencies in the late 1900s. He's making a lot of money right now on trading against the euro. And this is the way the guy makes his money, and he makes billions. I understand now he's the 10th wealthiest man in the world.
If I could just insert, because why I'm playing on this is you have in your newsletter, you've taken the article from David Horowitz's Front Page magazine, which I highlighted, and that is the Soros plan to topple Netanyahu. That's a very, very serious headline. So go ahead.
It's very serious because he's also funding the J Street Lobby, which is a Jewish-led liberal political action committee to counter AIPAC, which is the American-Israeli Public Action Committee, or Public Affairs Committee, that's been a major force here in Washington for many, many years, who's had a lot of positive influence on Congress's support of Israel, and he believes they have too much clout. And so he thinks Netanyahu needs to be toppled. He thinks his J Street funded organization should become a bigger player, and they already have the Obama administration's ear. And this is a very small group, but it has big money behind it. And he has this concept of how that Israel should give up this land and make peace with the Palestinians as soon as possible, and that Netanyahu is an impediment to that because of some of his positions. He also is the one behind the Arab Spring.
Yep.
That's pushing a vision of change and democracies in the Middle East completely removed from the reality of radical Islam's influence and continued influence in the days ahead. But he is one of the guys behind the scenes that have pushed a lot of political buttons to help push the Arab Spring through.
Well, Steve Croft writes about Soros, and Steve Croft represents pretty much a leftist network and a leftist TV program, 60 Minutes. And Croft wrote this. This is some time ago. Could it be as much as a year ago? George Soros is an evil man. He's anti-God, he's anti-family, he's anti-American, and he's anti-good. What we have in Soros is a multi-billionaire atheist with skewed moral values and a sociopath lack of conscience. He considers himself to be an elitist, world-class philosopher, despises the American way, and loves to do social engineering and change cultures. Well, we know he has changed cultures, and as you've already referenced, and many others have commented, he may be one of the hands behind this Arab turmoil that we've seen which broke out around about December 10th, 2010. It's going on even as we speak. So when you stick, when you play upon the story out of front page magazines, the Soros plan to topple Netanyahu, I am encouraging people to listen when somebody talks like this as you are talking. So where then do you think Soros would want to take this possible plan to topple Netanyahu? What is a worst-case scenario?
Well, I think he would prefer to see a government in Israel led by the Labor Party, which Ehud Barak used to be part of and Shimon Peres used to be part of, and it was very left, and also something like a Zippy Livni Kadima party that's very interested in practically doing anything for peace, and that includes evicting a couple hundred thousand Jews from their homes in Judea and Samaria. So I think that's what he wants. I think he's extremely idealistic. I think in some ways he believes that this Arab Spring can work and that there will be tremendous amount of money made for capitalists throughout the Middle East and also within the nation of Israel. I think he believes that peace is possible, you know, between Israel and the Palestinians, and he wants to push that and get leadership in Israel in place that can make that happen, and then also support leaders throughout the Middle East that are interested in democracy and not fully comprehending the evil of radical Islam.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, those are some possible scenarios. Time will tell. I'm not sure. The scenario could be even more evil than that, but we don't really know.
So, right.
Bill, you're going to be speaking to us on, let's see, Saturday, October the 8th. And if you could put in a sentence, probably a short one, teasing folks to come out and hear you. And folks, that is next weekend. That's October 7th and 8th at Grace Church, Eden Prairie. And that's Friday night, 7 p.m., Saturday, 9 a.m. That'll be 9 to 5 on Saturday. And there's no cost, no registration. We'll also have Joel Rosenberg, Eric Barger, as I said, Bill Koenig, Mark Hitchcock, Granite House. Bill, I got a minute to tease my listeners.
Jan, what I want to do is bring people current with what's taking place, give them a good idea of what could happen and transpire in the next 6 to 12 months, and also give them a perspective that they're not getting in the daily newspaper and on TV, on radio. And that's my desire, and I have a lot of really interesting information from a biblical perspective and also from a perspective of being at the White House that I think you're guests will really enjoy.
Well, Bill was with us for the first time back in 2002 and then 2003, 2004, 08, and now this year. And I can tell you it is totally cutting edge. Again, that's October 7th, 8th, Grace Church, Eden Prairie. That's a southwest suburb of Minneapolis. We're well into our second big block of rooms in the second hotel. So we've heard from about 20 states that maybe have attendees coming. But again, there's plenty of room for you. Give us a call, 763-559-4444. Bill, we're looking forward to, we'll try to keep the snow away for another week or so. Can't promise that after October 8th we could have a blizzard by October 9th, but you know that.
Yes.
Again, folks, here's the website, watch.org, on the web, watch.org. And remember, this program, all programming, is posted to my website on Sunday, olivetreeviews.org, olivetreeviews.org. You can always order a single CD of a program you hear, a couple of programs if you'd like, a couple of hours. Again, olivetreeviews.org, now airing on about 416 radio outlets across America. Okay, Bill Koenig, looking forward to it. I'm just going to give a couple more announcements, and that would be we have a print and an e-newsletter, olivetreeviews.org. You have the phone number, and we're going to be having CDs and DVDs available of Understanding the Times 2011. So make note of the website and the phone number. Coming up next segment, Dr. Mark Hitchcock, also one of our speakers at Understanding the Times 2011. Have some interesting things to share about what he'll be talking about next weekend. Stick with me. Don't touch that dial. Don't go away.
God is using Understanding the Times to help change lives all over the world. Rebecca writes from Portland, Oregon, "Everyone should hear the inconvenient truth Jan talks about. It enables me to discern the times." This from Peter in Washington State, "When I need a dose of reality that still offers hope, I tune in to Understanding the Times Radio." Jan Markell is committed to discerning the truth and sharing the good news. And while the gospel is free, the means to deliver it is not. Your gift to Understanding the Times is fully tax-deductible and helps ensure that we're able to continue to reach people through radio and other media. You can send your gift to P.O. Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311, or call 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. Of course, you can always give safely and securely at olivetreeviews.org. Welcome back to Understanding the Times. Here's Jan Markell.
On the heels of Mark Hitchcock's prophecy bestseller 2012, The Bible and the End of the World, comes a suspenseful novel, co-authored with best-selling novelist Alton Gansky, about the supposed expiration date of planet Earth, December 21st, 2012, the Mayan Apocalypse. Andrew Morgan is a wealthy geologist in search of the meaning of life. In his quest for answers, he encounters the ancient Mayan predictions that the world will end in 2012. That the claim seems supported by math and astronomy drives him to check on them. Then, he meets Lisa Campbell, an attractive Christian journalist also researching the Mayan calendar. She shares what the Bible says about the last days, yet is quickly dismissed. During 2011, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, tsunamis, and wars rapidly escalate. Are these the early indicators of a global apocalypse? Will anyone survive? Does Lisa's Bible have the answers after all? Or has fate destined everyone to a Holocaust from which there is no escape? The Mayan Apocalypse by Mark Hitchcock and Alton Gansky.
Well, the Bible does have all the answers, even to the end of the world issues, and that's what we try to focus on. That is issues of the day here on Understanding the Times Radio. And almost everywhere you go today, well, there's a lot of things, including a deep-seated fear, a brooding sense of uneasiness, fear about the future, pandemic plagues, the economy, war, monstrous national disasters, nuclear weapons falling into the wrong hands. Well, the world today is headed for a continuing crisis, obviously in the Middle East and probably other places as well. And no one knows exactly what form the crisis will take, but as always, people will begin to ask the big questions, is this the end? My guest for this segment is Dr. Mark Hitchcock. He has written 20 books on biblical prophecy or eschatology. He is one of our speakers coming up on at Understanding the Times 2011. Let me just say quickly, the other speakers include Joel Rosenberg, Bill Koenig, Eric Barger, and Brandon House. So, Dr. Mark Hitchcock, welcome back to Understanding the Times Radio.
Yeah, it's great to be back with you again.
Now, I know we're going to touch on, when you minister to that particular conference, that's coming up here so soon. I know you're going to touch on some issues as it concerns this 2012 situation, but Mark, here's what I want to say. Is this kind of, and you even have a new book out, and we just played a little clip from promo of it. Why do you want to highlight the 2012 Mayan calendar prediction, which kind of predicts the end of the world, when you and I know it isn't going to happen?
Well, I think the reason I want to talk about it is because, you know, I think there's so much deception out there today. You know, you and I know it's not going to happen, and probably a lot of other people do, but people get pulled into these kind of things. You know, we think about the Harold Camping, you know, date setting. You know, people were talking about that. I think with all that's going on in our world, a lot of people are fearful. A lot of people have this sense, even unbelievers do, the world's getting near closing time. And, you know, with all the things that are happening, the weather patterns, the fear of pandemic plagues, you know, nuclear weapons, all these kinds of things that are out there today, I think, you know, when people begin to hear things like, you know, the world's going to end at a certain date, I don't think that's as far-fetched to people as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when people hear that, they look at our world today and they say, you know, maybe that's correct. And as I'm going to point out at the conference, the Mayans knew some incredible things. I mean, they knew things that I think are beyond the ability of human beings to know. I think they were getting some information from somewhere else.
Well, we need to clarify where that might be.
Yeah, it wasn't from God.
Okay.
It was from demonic sources.
All right.
So, you know, they knew an incredible amount about the heavens and astronomy. I mean, I'll talk about some of that. And so
mm-hmm.
a lot of people are drawn to these kinds of things because they think, gosh, if these people knew this much, you know, about all these other things, maybe they did have some kind of an inside track. And what I really try to do in books like this, though, is not just talk about the whole Mayan, you know, prediction, mm-hmm. but use that as kind of a springboard to talk about a lot of the other things that the Bible has to say about the end times that I think are very important for us to know. But, you know, these kinds of things that are out there, they're going to be proliferating more and more as you know, crazier things keep happening in our world. And I think, you know, it sets people up for deception. There's a real new age element to
yes.
this whole 2012 thing
yeah,
as well.
There is.
That I think is there. So, you know, this whole 2012 situation could be used as an explanation for the rapture, too, if the rapture were to occur before that takes place. So there's a lot of tie-ins with Scripture that we'll look at with this.
Now, how do you answer the sort of the question or how do you answer the statement that, well, I mean, we've always had pretty cataclysmic conditions. We've always had wars. We've always had kind of strange, aberrant weather and weather extremes. We've always had governments in crises. We've always had greed. The culture has always been declining. So in your opinion, what makes this 21st century so different?
Well, to me, there are two main things. One is the convergence of things that we
mm-hmm.
see. In the last 60 years, we've seen, you know, the formation of the modern state of Israel. We've seen, you know, the embryonic phases of a reunited Roman Empire. It really started in 1957. We see the rise of globalism. I mean, you know, the world is rulable now. I mean, people
yeah.
look out there and they think, you know, I see how there could be a one-world economy, a one-world ruler. And we look and we see whole world focus being on the Middle East. You know, no people 50 years ago would have laughed if you had said the whole world was focused on the Middle East. But that's the focal point. You see, you know, the nations of Ezekiel 38 and 39, they're identifiable nations today. We see the cry for world peace. You know, the event that begins the seven-year tribulation period is a treaty between the Antichrist, probably some European leader, and Israel. And so, you know, what does the world want more than anything else? There's this clamoring for peace. So we see all of those things converging in such a short period of time that, to me, is very unique in history. The other thing I would say is just the acceleration of events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with 24/7 world news and all these different things going on, you know, everybody knows immediately when anything happens in the world. And so that just accelerates the impact exponentially when events take place. You know, I live here in Oklahoma, and I always like to think, you know, it's these farmers and people live out here on, you know, the different land. I mean, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, they could have cared less what happened in Greece. You know, if Greece went under and its economy, no one would have batted an eye.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden today, when Greece defaults, our stock market goes down.
Yeah.
And we know about these things. So to me, the acceleration of events and the way the world has really shrunk, is very unique in our time in history, and I think it's unlike any other. I think everyone would have to see that.
As you know, if you just played that little clip coming into this segment, and actually that's a promo for one of your newer books, The Mayan Apocalypse, which happens, that happens to be a novel, folks. And by the way, Mark, you're kind of new to novels. I think you're a little bit like I am, trying to deal with reality all the time. And obviously you've come up with a co-author here, and you've come up with a novel. Very interesting.
Yes, I did the nonfiction book, you know, in 2012, kind of debunking the whole Mayan calendar idea. But I thought it'd be people had talked to me about doing an end time novel, but I'd never had an idea that I thought was really, really good enough. But I thought, wow, what about taking this whole idea of someone believing in this, you know, and this 2012. So it's called The Mayan Apocalypse, and Alton Gansky is the man that helped write it. I couldn't write a novel, so. You know, we collaborated together, and he did a great job. So it's a good book that I think people would enjoy. It kind of gives, again, the storytelling kind of twist to the whole 2012 end of the world scenario.
Well, we carried your book Cashless for a year or more, and I think that was a 2009 book, and that talks about the various economic issues that are going to be facing us, not necessarily just future, because really present as well. We're in a cashless world now, but not exclusively cashless. And Revelation talks heavily about one world type of a system, one world economy, etc. And as you look at our current economic troubles, and believe me, everybody listening knows there are troubles big time as it concerns not just America's economy. That's what we tend to focus on. We've seen rioting, particularly in parts of Europe, and we've seen other parts of the world that are coming to grips with either droughts or famines or one thing after another that's catastrophic. But let me go back to the issue of cashless. Where do you put that topic into the current scenario with unstable governments, economically speaking, all across the planet?
Well, I think what just that, you know, all of that looks to, points toward is, you know, a coming one world economy, just what the Bible predicts. And it seems to me that the Antichrist, you know, when this final world ruler comes on the scene, that it's easier to get people together economically than it is politically. And so I think the economic is going to be the hook to bring people together. We see that in Europe today. You know, they've come together, you know, really pretty much economically. I mean, they still have their own governments and they function. But, you know, with all that's happening in Europe with the economy there, what I'm hearing from people is they're, you know, the thing's either going to break up or they're going to have to actually come together more strongly, actually politically. And so I think, you know, economics is kind of the first thing. And with people going down today, the problem that we have in our world today is, like I said earlier, if Greece would have defaulted, you know, 50 years ago or 100 years ago or whenever it was, no one would have cared. It wouldn't have affected anybody else. But today, you know, and Greece isn't a large economy when you look at the whole world. Neither is Ireland or Portugal, you know, these nations. But when they begin to have the default, there's just this ripple or domino effect throughout the markets of Europe and then everywhere else. We're just so interconnected. So there's going to have to be some kind of agreement, something where the world comes together, because people don't want to just continue to have this uncertainty and instability where, you know, if one person goes down, we kind of all go down. So, I mean, that's the only ultimate solution, and I think that's we're ultimately working towards that. I mean, it's already here in some ways, but it's not been formally recognized yet that that's what we have.
Talking this particular segment with Dr. Mark Hitchcock, he's one of our Understanding the Times 2011 speakers. That's coming up around the corner, along with Joel Rosenberg, Bill Koenig, Brandon House, and Eric Barger, and I'll be there as well. We hope that you can come on out to Grace Church in Eden Prairie. That is a southwest suburb of Minneapolis. I can tell you we've heard from about 20 states and even a couple of foreign countries going to be joining us that particular weekend. So if you haven't decided yet, not only should you decide, but also decide not to show up late, okay? Come a little early so you get a good seat there in the Sanctuary of Grace Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. And we meet Friday night from 7 to 10 p.m. and come back on Saturday from 9 a.m. to approximately 5 p.m. We'll try to throw a couple of question and answer sessions in there as well. Mark, you have written, and you've written on so many topics. I think you've got almost 20 nonfiction books out. And one of them is, and I want to approach this carefully, one of them is The Late Great United States. I believe that's the title.
It is, yes.
Give us your take on how you see America fitting into the end times scenario. And let me insert here that I think Americans and even American Christians are getting weary of the sort of the America bashing, but also just the obvious perception that America is declining. Morally, in every respect, she's declining. And that can only bode kind of bad things. But how do you see it tying in?
Well, it's clear in the Bible. You know, the word America is never in the Bible.
Of course,
a lot of people find America in, like, Isaiah 18. There's an unnamed nation there. Some would say America is the young lions of Tarshish in Ezekiel 38. Some would say America is Babylon the Great. Some think we're the 10 lost tribes of Israel. I mean, there's all kinds of views out there, you know, of where America is. I don't think any of those refer to America. So I think America is absent from the prophetic scriptures. Now, some would say, well, I mean, a lot of countries aren't in prophetic scriptures. You know, Bible doesn't mention every nation. But it seems to me if we were the great world superpower that we are today, the Bible would mention America somewhere. It seems to me, you know, the Antichrist and this reunited Roman Empire, whatever form that takes, is going to run the world at that point, because it says, who is like the beast? You know, who can make war with him? And so I think something has to happen to America for power to shift in that way. Now, what's going to happen? No one knows, because the Bible doesn't tell us. But you could speculate. You know, we could today. I mean, look at, again, our economy, our dependence on foreign oil, some type of nuclear 9/11, God forbid, would happen. You know, there are all kinds of scenarios, just the corruption from within. You know, Romans chapter 1, you know, talks about how God gives people over, you know, gives nations over to their sin. You know, the first phase of God's judgment on people is abandonment. You know, he abandons people. He gives them over to their sin. And when you read Romans 1, I mean, it's a, you know, the first sign of God giving you over is a sexual revolution. You know, in Romans 1, 24 and 25 and 26 and 27, it's a homosexual revolution. And then, you know, beyond that, it's just the open encouragement of evil. Well, we already see those things today. And so it's telling you when you see those things, it's not a sign you're going to get judged. It's a sign you're already being judged. You know, God's turning you over to these things. So, you know, on the inside, on the outside, economically, I mean, it's at all places. Now, you know, someone says, well, what do you think is going to happen? Well, my view is I think America will remain decently strong until the rapture, because we're the main defender of Israel. But think about when the rapture takes place. I mean, I think that could very easily be God's judgment on America. You're going to have, you know, depending on what percentage you take, what facts you take of how many people really are true believers in Jesus Christ and trust in him alone for salvation. But, you know, the Barna group has it about 8%. Let's say that's even close. You know, that's 30 million people gone in a moment in the twinkling of an eye. I mean, you talk about a crash on the Dow Jones the next day and you know, devastation. Now, there's believers all over the world, but there probably is a higher percentage here in America than anywhere else. And certainly we're developed, such a developed nation, that it could very well be that the rapture, you know, will bring America to her knees. We'd become a second-rate nation overnight. And, you know, then we may become part of Antichrist's empire. Again, the Bible doesn't say, but the rapture is going to change a lot of things. And so that's the thinking that I really have about what America's future is. And again, not all of that is laid out in the Bible, but the rapture is in the Bible, and we know that event's going to take place. And we can, I think, just, you know, easily envision what kind of a cataclysmic effect that would have upon our country.
Part of the problem, Mark, is that we're in a generation now. So let me put it this way. A couple of generations ago, folks would have been taught about what we're talking about. Folks were taught what we're talking about. And now for the last probably two generations, let me rephrase that, for the last, 25, maybe even 30 years, The pulpits are silent on this topic, and therefore somebody who might have an interest in it is going to have to go out searching for some material to study, because it's not being talked about in our churches, and very few radio programs, very few television programs. Fortunately, there are a few, but not very many will address these issues.
No, that's exactly right. I work out at the local YMCA here. I went in there the other day, and there's a guy in there. I hadn't seen him for a long time. He comes up to me and says, "Hey," he goes, you're Mark Hitchcock. I go, "Yeah." He said, "I saw you on a publication from Olive Tree Ministries from Jan Markell."
Oh, all right.
And he goes, "I looked, and I saw your picture," and he said, "I thought, I've seen that guy at the Y a bunch of times."
Interesting.
And so anyway, we began to talk, and he goes to a local Catholic church here.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I told him I'm kind of doing a prophecy series here at the church, invited him, you know, if he wanted to come over. But he said, "Yeah, I'm going to this Catholic church." I thought, here's a guy living here in Edmond, Oklahoma, where I am, who goes to a Catholic church, and yet he's interested in these things.
Yeah, very
interesting.
He's trying
to find answers, and he's somehow found out about the ministry there. So, you know, talk about, you know, far-reaching like
yeah.
that. But you're right. I mean, but even in, you know, quote, evangelical-type churches and all that, there's just a total dearth of really instruction about most anything other than just, you know, the very basic, most practical things of life. There's really no doctrinal, real theological teaching that's going on, and especially in eschatology.
And here, folks, are just a few reasons why that is a tragedy, because this topic, it emphasizes and it challenges us to live holy in an unholy age. This encourages evangelism. The study of the end times is a faith builder. It reminds people that God keeps his promises. It helps us to focus on things of an eternal nature. And we learn that God has an overwhelmingly positive future for us. And that's also what we want to remind you of when you attend our conference, October 7th and 8th, is that God does have an overwhelmingly positive future for you. And Mark, another thing is the Bible, one-third of the Bible is prophecy-related. People often lose sight of that. Again, it's not talked about in the pulpit. We're running down real short on time, Mark.
Well, no, that's right. I mean, you know, almost a third of the Bible is prophecy, and it's so, you know, rarely taught today, but it is something that we need to focus on. And I hope people will, you know, take time and come to the conference. It's always been a blessing to me to be there, and I know it'll bless them as well if they'll take time to come.
Well, Jesus chastised the Pharisees of his day for not knowing the signs of the times, and I honestly think he could chastise a few Christian leaders today for leaving this topic out. Do you think it's because it's controversial that it's being shunned? Do you think perhaps it's just not being taught in the seminaries, and thus our pastors don't know what to do with it? What is your perception of this?
Well, I think it probably because there are a lot of views on it. It takes time to understand it. You have to really study, and some guys don't want to take the time to do that. You know, some people think it's not applicable to everyday life. I mean, you just gave a lot of the reasons it is. I mean, you take Paul when he was at Thessalonica. You know, he was only there probably for a few weeks' time, and he taught those believers about all kinds of things, but including the end times. And these were brand new Christians.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we're going to have a ministry that's a biblical ministry, it's part of the well-balanced diet of teaching that we need to give to people.
Well, folks, one thing you want to avoid, and that is the date setters. And by the way, in hour two, I'm going to be rerunning Eric Barger's program that he did for me on Herald Camping. This was this summer, and many of you are traveling in the summer and wanted you to hear it again. You know, Mark, whereas that camping situation was a tragedy, in every respect, it was a tragedy. At least he put the topic on the front burner. People now can know they've heard about this issue.
Well, that's right. And the problem, yeah, there's a good side to it, is it made people aware that something out there, people believe the Lord is coming. The bad side of it is it kind of gave a black eye, and I've heard so many people mocking the rapture, you know, and this whole idea of it. So, you know, things like that, they at least alert people to the fact that something is going to happen someday, but then on the other side, they just really give this black eye and allow the blasphemers to come out and mock it.
Again, and Mark, you have a newer book, I believe, as well, and that's on the Antichrist. Is that right?
Yeah, I've written a book. I just, who is the Antichrist? I have about 45 questions and answers that I have in the book. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just got tired of hearing about Obama being the Antichrist and
okay.
all these things.
You mean
you know,
he isn't? Is that
I wanted to write
isn't,
a book,
huh?
You know, and talk about that. I'm sorry?
He isn't?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, Yeah, we can see a lot of foreshadows in a lot of people. But,
yeah, that's true.
But anyway, I wanted to lay out just it's kind of just goes in depth and a lot of questions and answers. Probably not any question a person's thought of I haven't answered in the book.
Will you have that with you at the conference, Mark?
I will. I'll bring copies of that.
Please do. And you'll have copies of a lot of your books present, right?
I will. I'll probably bring copies of about 5 or 6 of the books that I have, yes.
Well, bring lots of them. That's all I can say. Folks, that's October 7th and 8th at Grace Church, Eden Prairie, southwest suburb, Minneapolis. And no cost, no registration, just show up. More info, 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444. Mark, thank you. We'll see you shortly.
Yeah, thanks for having me. God bless you.
All right.
Looking forward to it.
Eric Barger up, hour 2. Stick around, folks. Don't touch that dial.
If Jan Markell's radio outreach has helped you understand the times, would you consider a tax-deductible donation to Olive Tree Ministries? You could write to Box 1452, that's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311, or call 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444. You can also order and donate securely at olivetreeviews.org. And thanks for listening to Understanding the Times.